the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Look who's come to visit with me today, and we are going to have a conversation that is so heavy, you're going to need a crane to lift it, right here on the Edge, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today is a very, very sensitive subject, and I want all parents to pay attention. You didn't pay to get up in here, so you better pay attention. Right here, that's Sue Sassine. Okay, and down below, down there, that's April Nikki Tapscott. And the story that they are about to share with us is incredible. It's heartbreaking, but it's also a story of a victim not being victimized and becoming victorious and being able to help others. It's really hard for me to get my head around pedophilia and the abuse of children. Be it sexual, or, you know, just taking pictures of whatever it is, it's sick. I don't understand how anybody on the planet could find any entertainment, amusement, satisfaction, or desire for a child. But Sue was married to a pedophile, an upstanding gentleman in the community, in the church. People thought he was just stellar, but he was a monster. And his daughter, one of his victims. So we're going to talk to them today about really what to do, what are the signs, what are some of the things that they missed, some of the things maybe they've inadvertently ignored, but I want you all to pay attention. I need you to keep a watchful eye on your children. So let's start with Sue. Welcome to On the Edge. How are you?
I'm great, and thank you for having us, April. We really appreciate it.
Well, I really appreciate it because I'm trying to get my head around this. Some of the questions, I've already cleared them with you, are going to be tough because my brains want to know. And they sitting there in the back, you know, wondering. So you guys are going to do your best. And I really thank you in advance for opening up. So now, April, we share the same name. were you born in April?
No, I was born in June.
And I was born in August. Sue, what was you thinking when you named her April?
It was my favorite name as a child. I named all my dolls April. I don't know.
Oh, really? Oh.
That was right.
Well, I love my name. I do. And I was born in August. But see, my parents was in the 60s. So I think they might have been tripping a little bit. They didn't know what time it was. Let's start with you, Sue. Tell me a little bit about you and about your marriage and your relationship.
Well, You think you know, but what I know is you don't know what you don't know. And we see what we want to see. And what I saw in my marriage of 20 years was a man that was fun, a man that was full of laughter, a man that was a good provider. He was a church-going man. He was a deacon in the church. He didn't cuss. He maybe occasionally had a beer. He was just this person that everybody loved to come to our house. Everybody loved to be around us. We went on lots of trips. We did great things. It just was not in my wheelhouse. I don't think I even knew how to spell a word pedophile. I don't even think that anyone ever spoke it. So it just was not knowledge that I had in that marriage. Was it a perfect marriage? No. Is anybody's marriage perfect? You know, there are ups and downs.
Yes, yes, perfect. Okay, I'm going to test it.
Exactly. 6 years. So anyway, you know, 15 years into
should I say as of today at 306 is perfect.
Exactly. So I guess to say that when Nikki was brave enough, and there was a specific instance that probably caused it, she was able to literally, what I call, vomit out a story to me at the age of 15. And I can honestly say that we were on the second floor in her bedroom. And if you had opened the window and pitched me out of the window, I could not have been more shocked. I was unprepared mentally, to know that. And now, of course, years later, therapy later, books later, knowledge later, all of those things, I can look back now and say, oh, well, maybe if I had known that, I might have seen this. But you just, you know, 47 years ago, well, 30 years ago, we didn't have internet. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have, it just was, it was a time frame that, and in where I lived, in my church, nobody ever mentioned something like that.
Well, you know, sometimes it's, you know, it's better not said, because pedophiles and sexual predators and sexual abuse of children have been going on forever and ever and ever.
Forever. And you know, if I had to say one thing about it, if you suspect it, speak up.
That's right.
That's it. That's the bottom line. And that, and I will just tell you in the short, after I learned and I immediately called his sister, guess what was the first thing she said to me? Now, mind you, I'd known her for 25 years. Yeah, that happened to me and to him when he was a child. Talk about a secret. The evil.
Let me tell you something that happened to me one time. So my parents was real cool, but my mother was pregnant at 15. And she always made my virginity seem so precious. She always made me feel so special. The sex talk was an ongoing conversation. It was no secrets. It was, you know, no good touch, bad touch. You know, I knew what was happening. There was never any problem. So she let me go visit some friends of the family in Las Vegas. Something was strange about this man. He had a room, and in his room was every Playboy centerfold taped up on the wall. I mean, T and A all over the wall. And I'm saying, okay, this is inappropriate. Well, early in the morning, I get up and he say, come here and sit on Papa Seal's lap. And I'm like, no, come on now, ain't nobody here. Come here, sit here. And, you know, trying to groom, kind of stroke my hair and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. And really nice. You know, you want to go here with me? You want to do this and all that? Well, I got in the swimming pool. And he's teaching me how to swim, and he's holding me on my stomach. Well, all of a sudden, his finger is not touching my stomach, touching my butt. I'm screaming and squinching. This is totally foreign to me. Now, I'm at that ripe age, mm-hmm. like 12 or 13, right, when you're getting budding, right? I got on the phone. I said, Mama, something about this ain't right. I told her what's happening. She said, have them to have you at the airport at 4 o'clock.
Yep.
When I came home, I told his daughter what had happened, and she swore before God that I was a liar, that this was not true, mm-hmm. that this person couldn't do this. Now, see, I had the wherewithal to know the signs, because Mama had schooled me a long time ago.
Right.
I had this conversation.
Right. But
pedophiles are not trying to hurt you. They're not trying to be abusive. They're not. They're trying to groom you so that you are mm-hmm. sexually aroused, that you feel comfortable with this, that it's okay, that this is special, this is something between me and you. Well, it's wrong. And then when a person grows up and they're an adult and they go through these same sexual emotions, that's when the trauma hits. Because you're feeling that this is wrong. I'm not supposed to be feeling mm-hmm. this. This was taught to me at an early age. Tell me some of the experiences that you kind of went through mentally, April, with this. A little bit about your story and what happened the day that you finally decided to break out of your shell and tell your mom.
Well, I was groomed. His was more a control. His was not a sexual satisfaction at all. He wanted control. He loved to see if he could control you 100%. And for me, if I didn't act right, if I didn't, you know, anything other than what he expected of me, then he would ignore me, or, you know, he would just withhold his love. So growing up, I had a really, my cognitive was delayed on a lot of levels as far as being able to relate. Because here I had a mom that, you know, was loving and, you know, just wanted wanted to be there, wanted to be with me. And then I had a father that I had to act a certain way. My mom, I could act anyway. So it was just always a tug and pull with me when I was little. And he played mind games. He played mind games with my mom and with I. And he was just so manipulative. And what did it was, as I grew up, even though I would tell him, no, I don't like it, stop. You know, he would pull away from me and withhold love and make me feel bad for speaking up. You know, because you're not allowed to have a voice. You're not allowed to be disrespectful, you know, because he was still a man of God and you are supposed to obey your parent no matter what. He would just kind of, he'd leave me alone for a little bit. And then all of a sudden out of the blue, he was like a predator. You know, he basically hunt you sometimes to see what he could get away with. He was just constantly playing a game. So I was never felt safe when he was in town, because he did travel a lot. But when he was in town, I never was safe in our home. Then I think high school hit and I started dating other guys, having friends, leaving the house a lot more. So his control was, it was still there, but it was in a broader sense. But now I was changing and he didn't like it. Mm. It was a very sick, in his mind, it was a very sick relationship. But for me, it was like, I want the heck away from him. I stayed out with my girlfriends. And then if I had girlfriends come over, you know, we would all be in the house. Then I got pregnant my junior year, I think, mm-hmm. and he called me a slut. And that's what did it. That's when I called my mom at work and told her she needed to come home. I mean, I will never forget him calling me a slut. And I just was like, what? How can you call me that? You know? And then that's when mom came home and I just told her everything. Told. And then I think at the very end of it, I said to her, we can never talk about it, because he would tell me all the time, if I talked about it, every time I talk about it, bad things will happen. You know, your mom will disappear or something bad will happen to me or something bad will happen to you. You know, and I think after that, I think the bad thing, I guess, to have him tell me, see, I told you, you were right, is I didn't speak. I became mute for almost a year.
Wow, yeah. If you ever read I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou, that is the same thing happened to her, that she muted herself, that she couldn't even speak about. Yeah,
that's why we named the book Bad Things Happen, because that's what he would say to her. From the time she was probably three, he would whisper in her ear, don't tell. If you tell, bad things are going to happen. He groomed her.
Let me tell you about the don't tell, okay?
I know. I tell all the time.
The first thing I tell my godparents, my godchildren, any children, you tell. You hurry mm-hmm. up and tell. I had a neighbor next door. My spirit was not right with him. Not right with him, okay? And he came over here to our house one time, sat on the couch, and I saw this. My daughter was flinching like, ew. I said, that's a bad man. I said, my mm-hmm. spirit is telling me that's a bad man. I said, he shouldn't be touching you like that. And see, if Mr. Magnificent had a cut loose on him, well, that would have been a whole different story. Mm-hmm. I told her, I said, so when you are walking to school and he says, can I give you a ride? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I said, he sits in the garage. And when he sits in the garage, he's sitting there in his drawers with a beer and the garage door open. Something about that ain't right. I said, mm-mm. Don't go over there for absolutely no reason. If something in your spirit brains, if something in your intuition, and you better mm-hmm. follow it. Now, Sue, I want to go back to you. It's going to be tough.
Okay.
I know you loving on your man, and I know you traveling in the church circles and going on trips, but how could you not have known theme, melt, nothing. How could you not know nothing? Let me tell you, I've been married to Mr. Magnificent 36 years. I will go through his wallet. I will go through his car. There's no such thing as, oh, I've got a password and you can't have it. You can't shut the door. I'm going to go on your computer and I'm going to check your history, okay? Because when you marry somebody, that's a union. It's not you still have your privacy. You should have stayed single. I saw him the other day going through my glove compartment in my car, and I felt a little unsettled. I wasn't doing anything, but he's got absolutely every right. How could you have not known, had idea or nothing? You know, even when you had sex with him, was it different? Was it weird?
That's an interesting question. That's an interesting way to look at that. And, you know, here's the thing. 32 years ago, I asked myself that question on that day. How could I not have known? And what I know about that, April, is that there was nothing to be gained at that moment when I asked myself to dive into in that moment. Oh, my God, what if and how, you know, it. That is a question that I did ask myself. And I wanted to know the answer, but I quickly realized that it just opened the door to shame, guilt, pain, beating myself up, feeling like a terrible mother, wanting to just completely destroy myself. Because in that moment, I knew as soon as I asked myself that this was not going to get me anywhere to beat myself up in that moment. So I can tell you that there is not then, nor is there now, anyone in your audience that is going to gain anything of value from beating up that question. There's no good answer to that. So what I say is that whether or not you knew and didn't do anything about it, whether or not you suspected and didn't do anything about it, whether or not you never knew anything about it, it's really not a question that even needs to ever be answered. The question is, what did I do about it when I actually acknowledged that it happened? That's the question. And I did do something about it the minute that I knew. That's the only way I can answer that question.
And it's not to beat yourself up, but it is for women that are not paying attention. And, you know, what are some of the signs? I mean, you know, this is weird and kind of kinky, but I had a friend that her boyfriend had got out of jail. And every time they went to make love, he turned her over. He wanted anal love because that's what he had become. And she didn't understand where that had come from. And then she found out that he had been violated, and now this is what his sexual desire was. So I asked you that with regards to sex because, you know, was there anything, you know, just different out of the ordinary? Was he still passionate? Was he still intimate? I mean, I'm asking for signs that someone can see, not so much to beat.
Well, okay, so in my specific case, he had been to Vietnam 3 times. And he was on the front line and he had been sprayed as a medic with Agent Orange. And it was shortly, I'd say probably it was about a year and a half after we were married, he became impotent. Mm. And went through all the tests, you know, all the things to do with Agent Orange. He had Agent Orange on his legs and stuff. Now, do I know now that that was not true? I do know that now. Not because of what happened to Nikki, but because of something, things that came to light later on. But at the time, I was committed. I'd had Nikki. We're married. This horrible thing is coming upon him. So sure, now I can look back on that and make all kinds of ideas about that. So you're right. I mean, it's a possibility that we could do that. But that seemed perfectly logical. He had all the records of showing the Agent Orange, and you read all the things about it, and impotence is one of the big things.
Okay, well, no, but he personally told you that he was impotent. I mean, that wasn't, you know,
well, remarried down the avenue with the sex life thing will work too much because he was basically a virgin and I was pretty much close to that and he had Agent Orange. But I think probably for the audience sake, now that I can look back on it and there are things that, you know, over time, things I learned, just different things. One of the things I know is that if this begins with a child that is 2 or 3 years old, it's a behavior that is normal. her curling into herself was a normal behavior. So it was a little bit more difficult for me to define that. And I'll give an example. She always sat on his lap. I mean, they were best buds, and we'd be up on the sofa watching TV, and he'd grab up a blanket because she said she was cold. And I mean, there was just nothing about that. I look back now, and I get that that might have been a sign that they were always under this blanket together, and that there might be some touching and things. I mean, those are the kind of things that I would say now. Right. Another example was my daughter, I took it to mean that she always wanted little girlfriends over all the time. And I thought in my mind, well, that's because she's an only child, and so this is good. And he constantly fought me on that. He'd say, there's no reason for her to have girls over all the time. That's just, I never did that as a child, and she shouldn't either. Well, now I look back on that, and why did he make that such a big deal? You know, there are signs that I can now see, but at the right time I didn't. So I would say that whenever there is this, just things that don't seem normal, kind of like with you, you know, whatever seemed normal. My daughter was a quiet little girl. She was a calm little girl. She didn't cry or anything. So those were not signs for me, but I know that I've had friends who've had these things happen to their children. And they would share those kind of things. They would say, suddenly my daughter was not behaving, and she was different. Mm-hmm. The example that I could have caught if I had had any idea at the time was that in the sixth grade, she went from making straight A's to failing.
Yeah, and changed my name.
And she changed her name. And so I went to the school. I signed up to be a room mother. I did all the things, you know, I tried to find out mm-hmm. from the teachers, was there anything going on, anything different? No, this is just a typical sixth grader. You know, they just do these things. I mean, I got all these people in. Well, more later, I realized that that was not true, but that was a true sign right there.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, there was a deep emotional shift. Just like if your kids are on drugs.
I went to see a therapist because I thought, what am I doing as a mother? And of course, this is the beautiful thing that he would say when he would come home, and I'd say, you know, honey, there's something wrong here and we need to talk about this or something going on. And he would very calmly pat me on my knee and say, honey, if you would just be consistent
wow.
in your discipline.
Wow.
That would send me right off into thinking there was something wrong with me. And he was sure to let me know that, you know. And so then he would tell
me. And then he would reel me in with my control of my personality and everything else.
And he would mm-hmm. say to Nikki, you need to say this to your mother. So whenever I did, she'd say, Mom, if you would just be consistent here.
Wow.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yep. That's what he would do. You know?
Well, so, yeah. Consistency makes the cake rise. Now, let me ask you a question. Nikki. Okay, so you tell your mom this and you start doing some self-evaluation and you look back on your life. What happens to you? What is the turning point? Now, did you have the baby?
No. He forcefully, I did not have a choice. I had to abort. I did not have a choice. He took work off, which was very unusual, and we went to a state over in Tennessee. And, you know, it was just like, we're doing it.
And so you had to deal with that as well.
I had to push that all the way down. I couldn't deal with it. Did divorce, you know, and so then I had that turmoil. And then I was going to graduate high school. So, you know, it was just, I think I buried it. I buried it for a really long time.
Bad things happened.
Yeah, bad things happen.
In her mind, telling bad things happen.
I couldn't say anything.
The house that she loved, she lost everything. In her mind, it was awful.
Because I told, now I had to have an abortion to show me, told you, if you wouldn't have told, you could have, you know, had a baby, you could have been with your boyfriend, you could have been happy, but because you told, this is your punishment, and bad things have happened to you yet again. Just shut your mouth, is what he would tell me.
So now you weren't his only victim, though.
No, but it took It took writing the book to find, I think we were up to 13.
What?
Yes. He was a predatory pedophile, and he was the worst, because there's three classes of them, and he was the worst one. He did family and strangers.
Wow.
And so, April, I'm going to say this. Now it is so much more prevalent, so much more known, so much more talked about. But in that day, there were there was a neighbor down the street that was a Christian counselor that I went to, and he left town the next morning, like at 4 a.m. for a 10-day trip. So fortunately, there was that. But it took me 3 weeks to get him to admit, at once he got home, that he actually did it. And immediately, the police were contacted. And I said to the police, please, do not go to my daughter's high school and speak to her. Do not, because they said, well, we have to speak to her. Well, they did, right out in the cafeteria in front of everybody. And what? She literally said, I am not talking to you, nor will I ever. She refused to speak to him. Larry refused mm-hmm. to speak to them. And here's what they said. Just go home.
Yep.
Just go home. Wow. Don't do it anymore.
Wow.
That's it.
Yep.
That would not probably happen now, but back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think he said, if you put me away, then she doesn't have like college. She won't have a car. She won't have this. You know, I'm the sole breadwinner. And, you know, totally played the police department. And they did. They just said, go home then. We don't ever want to see you in here for this again.
See, Brains, this is what I'm saying. You know, you don't want to take matters into your own hands. So to avoid that, you need to have the conversation with your children, okay? Mm-hmm. If anybody touches you and it's uncomfortable, that body part belongs to you. If you are around someone that tells you don't tell, you don't say anything. You come home and immediately you tell.
I think there's a whole new avenue to that, though. That parents, adults, and kids, and I mean, kids are so resourceful now, it's unbelievable. Grooming really needs to be talked about and brought to the forefront of, because that's where it starts. Then, because they have to see how far they can, you know, if it's control, they have to see how much you'll talk or what your likes are or, you know, how much they can get away with first. Mm-hmm. And then until they feel comfortable that you won't say anything, then the controlling of, well, it's just our little secret.
Right.
You know, but that again, kind of stuff.
It's the influence on the parents. You know, parents, mm-hmm. Now look, I had slumber parties. I went to slumber parties. That was all fine and good.
But there will be now I don't even want my girls to go to one.
You know, because you don't know what's going on. But see, I would show up. At like 10 o'clock. What y'all doing? I brought y'all some popcorn. I know you was up watching movies. you never know what is going on in somebody's household, okay? And there's a lot of good people that this is not to make you paranoid, because we got enough going on in the world right now. But this is to make you aware of what's going on, you know?
I didn't even know in middle school that he was doing it to my friends. I didn't even know. But that was a time period that I found out four of my friends, my personal close friends that used to come out, because I didn't go to other people's houses because I didn't trust anyone.
Right.
I was fine inside my room, you know, in my little shell. So I had friends come over all the time. Plus we had a pool, you know, I mean, we had a gorgeous house. I didn't even know he cornered them. That is how manipulative, you know, oh, you need to go, you know, throw chlorine in the pool or, you know, go do something. And then my friends would be inside the house making lunch with him. You know, it didn't dawn on me that he would even do something to one of my friends either. And I mean, I know as a child, you don't really think about that. But
a young woman that it was heartbreaking when she told me her story, because these two little girls were playing in the room. And one of the little girl's mother heard him say, you know, does your papa make you kiss and lick him all over? And she goes, yeah, Yeah, we do it all the time. But one time it choked me. So you know what that meant. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I was like, and her mother heard this. Now see me? I come on mm-hmm. I beat him to mm-hmm. the white meat show. Oh yes, I would have, and took great pleasure in it. Because that's my child. So when you had to come, you know, and face your friend, and then you had to get back in the community and keep your good name. How did you do that? How did you begin to rebuild yourself? How did you begin to start all over again?
Well, I think that having that Christian counselor immediately on, literally on day one when I called him, it was on a Sunday that this happened, and I literally had his phone number. He lived down the street, and I went down there, and that really is my, what I said to him was, I am unprepared for this. I don't even know what to do, but your job is to make me whole again, to get me to the other side. I do not want to be in rage. I don't want to be in anger. I don't want to hate. I don't want to be vindictive. And I want to help my daughter heal. And I don't know how to do this, and you got to help me. And so I think that looking forward, I could hold my head high. And I was not from Paducah, Kentucky, which is where he was from. But he grew up there with eight aunts and seven uncles and 1,000 cousins. And he was very well loved and respected in the church. And there wasn't a soul there that believed me, because I told. They didn't believe me. They didn't want to believe me. And so I literally said, you know, my job here is to survive this and get out of here in high school. And get out of here. That's it. My job is to figure out how to heal myself so that I can help my daughter. And we got to move on mm-hmm. because that was the only thing I could do. So I held my head high. And he married immediately after we divorced. He married a woman who had a daughter the same age. And I literally went to her and told her, Nikki told her daughter. This woman came to me 6 months later. She said, you know, you're ruining our lives.
Wow.
And I said, back up. It wasn't thing to ruin. So all I'm saying is that I didn't have any problem holding my head high. Now, my daughter, for a year and a half, I couldn't get her to do anything, to go anywhere. She would not, we're not going to have a conversation. She shut down.
And I can understand. So how did you open the door? I mean, you know, Nikki, you had to face these friends, these young, other young women. And then you also said that there was
my friends didn't know. My high school friends, nobody knew. Everybody thought, because my parents were getting a divorce and we were the perfect family. You know, on the outside, we were the Brady Bunch. I mean, everything was fine. Everybody loved both my parents, always outgoing, you know, completely pillars in the community. You know, both of them knew everybody. So everybody just thought that I took it really hard that they were getting a divorce. So, and just my whole aura and my attitude was, leave me alone. You know, I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to do anything. And I mean, I went to school and that was it. I didn't go out with any of my friends. I called in sick. I think I worked at Walmart for a little bit. I mean, I didn't want to do anything. I shut down. I didn't shop. I didn't do anything. And then I moved to go to, I went to college at UK, and that helped. Being out, you know, mom was all for, let's go, let's get out, go somewhere.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think 2 weeks before the University of Kentucky was going to start school, I went to her and I said, I want to go. Mm. And I mean, she did it in record time and got me enrolled in that school, moved me, got me in a dorm. And I think that helped. I mean, that helped a lot, you know, to be out of the house.
Okay.
Out of eyes.
Let me ask you this question though. Okay. So how did you re-engage in your own personal intimacy? you've been violated. You've had, you know, the misfortune of having to abort a child. You said that you were married, you had a divorce. How did you regain love in a balanced way that made you feel whole and that made you feel good about who you are as a woman?
I would have to say that I wasn't too keen on the therapy thing. I did group therapy. You know, when I was with mom here, she would do all the things. She knew I'm smart enough and I absorb enough information, even though you don't think I'm paying attention. And she knew if she put the information or the right people in front of me, I would listen. I may not participate, but I'll listen. And we would go to bookstores and sit on the floor in the bookstores for hours in the self-help section and just read and look and read and look. And those times, if I opened up a little, she would always be there and know what to say. You know, oh, maybe this book would be really good for you to read, or maybe this workbook would be really good. And then when I moved to California, see, my experience was I did have a therapist in high school when my dad was sitting in therapy with me, because that was part of the deal between him and my mom, that he had to go to therapy with me. So he went a couple times. And the therapist looked at me and she said, you know, you need to keep a relationship with him. He is your dad. And if you do that, then he'll never do this again. Well, in my mind, I am black and white on certain issues. You know, there's certain things that you will tell me and it's just like to a T, that's what I do. So in my mind, I thought, okay, if I keep a relationship with him, he is my dad. That makes sense. Then as a bonus, if I talk about it, if I can talk to him about it, if I can call him up when I'm mad and having a really bad day, you know, and vent at him, which I never did because I never had a voice, he'll never do it again, you know. And he sat there in therapy that day and was like, that's right, I'll never do it again. I'll never do it again. I had no idea I was being manipulated at that point. I mean, I was so shattered that I was like, okay, I'll just pick up the pieces when I can. And that was a piece of, I can do something. I can make sure nobody else has this in their life just by talking to him. So for the past, what did we say? 30 something years,
32 years.
I kept him in my life. No one understood that, but it helped me personally. I know it helped me personally in so many ways grow, because I got to, every time I faced him, I got a piece of me back. It would panic me and I'd be in complete anxiety mode and I'd be sick for like a week. You know, mom would be like, I don't know why you keep going back. He just does it every time. I don't know why you keep going back, but it was because I healed a piece of me.
Okay, so you healed a piece of you, but during that time, do you think that he was still exhibiting these behaviors and still doing this?
I lived in California. He lived in Ohio. We didn't see each other. All I had was his word. Did I think something was going on? Yes. Did I call him out on it and ask him point blank? Yes. Are you? I think I would say, are you behaving?
Wow.
And he'd, oh, yeah. And I would say, you're not doing anything with anybody. No, why would you ask that? I told you, I gave you my word. Well, I can't say names or be too specific, but I know of three people. That at his funeral, I knew of three people that I could point out and say yes. Wow. And one of them was the reason why he passed away, is because she filed charges.
All right, so bring me up to that point. The poor, unfortunate soul, sick soul, committed suicide.
Yes.
When you found out about that.
Well, I need to say that she is brave. She is very, very brave. She is somebody that I do know. And she was, for a year and a half, she told her mom. I believe it was a year and a half. I know it was at least a year. She told her mom and was mad and upset because no charges were brought. And she was a minor at that time. And when she turned 18, She finally, I don't know if she convinced, talked into, I don't know what the word is, but her mom finally filed the charges on him. That was on a, they tipped him off on a Sunday night. Monday morning, she called and filed the charges. Wednesday, he said that he answered the door willingly when they gave him the charges, you know, and when they, what's the word? They didn't arrest him, but they served him the papers on Wednesday. The papers supposedly said he had until Friday afternoon by 5 p.m. to turn himself in. Friday, which I don't even really know an accurate time, sometime Friday, he decided to commit suicide. And I got a call, I think that Friday night at 6 or 7, that he was missing and that there was a suicide note. Now, since I was little, he has always said, if I get caught, if I go to jail, I will commit suicide before they can get me. I will either do it or they will shoot me. So when my aunt called me and she called me and she told me he's missing. We don't know where he is. He's left a note. My comment was, who filed the charges? Mm-hmm. And nobody answered me. It wasn't until I got to Cincinnati for me to even find out who actually filed the charges, because I was going to actually go say, you did it. I didn't want him to pass away. I mean, he is my father, but on the other hand, he won't hurt anyone anymore. You know, I mean, it's like this give and take of
absolutely
father figure, but a monster. Two totally different people.
Sue, what was your reaction?
Completely different.
To the suicide.
Reaction when he died, when he killed himself?
Yes.
I text her immediately after I got off the phone with my aunt. Or I might have called you. I don't know.
I think you called me. And basically what I said is that this is what my therapist said. God would take care of this in his own way.
Yep.
I mean, I see it a little bit differently.
Whoa, pump your brakes right there. You think this is God's doing?
I see it a little bit differently than Nikki does. I think that the truth is that children want their parent to love them.
Absolutely.
Even when they're being evil to them, they want that. And my therapist said to me earlier on, and I still believe it, is Nikki wanted his love so badly. She just wanted him to love her unconditionally. And she wanted that more than she wanted to hate him.
Of course.
And even when she found out that he killed himself, she did not want to make that be bad. She wanted to love him more than she wanted to hate him. And she gets to have that right to do that. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I was relieved that she could no longer seek that love. That's how I felt as a mother. I am relieved that there is no possibility that she will ever get that love from him, because he was not capable of it.
Because I don't know. I don't see, right. But I don't see this. I don't see him committing suicide as an act of God taking control of it.
No,
what I'm saying, or being I think that, you know, suicide is very, very serious. You've got to be in a way different headspace. You have to feel so isolated, so ashamed, so
he was angry that he was caught. That is why he did it. He was angry that he could not get out of it. He tried every single way to get out, and he was mad.
And he lost control. That's what it was. He completely lost control. But I'm trying to think, and, you know, I understand that you're saying that you're relieved, Sue, that, you know, that he couldn't victimize, he couldn't hurt anybody else. But it's just really, it's hard for you to kind of, again, move forward with this in your life, because you've got to think about that too. You've got to think about how vulnerable, he's still a human being, no matter what it is. And he was victimized himself, according to what this family member said. And hurt people, You know, they do. There is a endless cycle of pain. And I just say right now to anybody, because I'm telling you, I got over 62,000 fans in 40 countries. And unfortunately, there might be a pedophile in there. You know, I go through my Facebook page and I see all these men, you know, liking all these women and you're beautiful and you're this, and I click on them. There's no information on them. They're stalking something. And also brains know that there are female pedophiles.
Yes.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So I mean, you remember that school teacher that was having sex, sex with a student and got pregnant twice and all this kind of stuff. So don't think that there are not women.
Well, and they don't have this neon sign on them. They don't have this neon sign on them going, I'm a pedophile.
No, they don't.
You know, look at Ted Bundy. I mean, his neighbors all thought he was the most wonderful, sweetest, kindest man that ever could be.
Yeah.
So you just...
Well, I'm looking at folks with a side eye. Yes, brains, I'm looking at you with a side eye too, because you never know. And all these people are making all these connections, and you're allowing your children to have so much freedom on these websites, and people are talking to them. And here in California, where I live in San Diego, there's sex trafficking. I saw it before all this pandemic. I'm sitting at the soul food restaurant looking out the window. I'm seeing three or four young girls, I mean, you know, got all of their goods hanging out, rolling up to these cars. And then I'm coming back. So what they call it is putting them on the blade, okay? So these gang members, instead of flipping drugs, they're flipping little girls. And that is human trafficking. It doesn't have to be across state lines. It doesn't have to be across borders. And, you know, when they take these children and they traffic them, this is a little bit different. But I need you to know that they're not just doing it for sex. They're doing it for sex. They're doing it for drugs. They're teaching them how to rob, steal, and they're also doing it for body parts.
They're grooming them.
Exactly. And they're doing it for body parts.
Yep. Or transplant.
And transplant. They're putting drugs into their breasts, their bottoms.
Look at that Netflix thing, Cuties, that they did, you know, the 12-year-old.
I don't think that that is appropriate. And so parents, you know, you got a responsibility, and you have to listen to your kids, you know, listen to them, not talk to them, not plant seeds in their mind. Somebody doing this is no, because believe and trust, they will check you out. And also, I know this is a little gross, but parents of little girls, check their underwear. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Check their underwear. Now, you know, anybody that's grown and done had sex, there's a different something going on with that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Look at how they feel about their body. Are they shamed about their body? Are they more promiscuous about their body? Check out and don't say anything. Sit back and observe and go with your gut feeling. You ladies have just been so open and so honest, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart, because I know this is difficult to relive over and over again and be asked these questions, and people assume one thing. Nobody ever knows until they have walked that walk. Now, you also have written a book. Tell me a little bit about the book before we conclude, because I want people to run out and get a copy so that you have a blueprint. Pull it up just a little bit for me, April. Nope, the bottom part.
Back
a little bit. Yeah,
that's it.
The bottom part.
There you go. Look at that, brains. It says bad things happened. Okay. So they have written that book. It is on Amazon. You will have an opportunity to win a copy here. I have had so many people love, like, and share. They're going to love, like, and share this interview for information. Show it to your young kids. Let them know this is the real deal. This is a conversation that we are having. This is going down. And again, I don't know, who was this jerk that was trafficking all those young girls? That
Epstein?
Yeah, Epstein. I'm going to tell you something, brains. In my mind, he ain't dead. Okay? I don't think he's dead. It was too smooth. It was too easy. Just to, you know, give him a little something. You know, they got the knockout drug. Slide him out. Sliding right onto that island that he was at. All of a sudden, you know, how you just get rid of a billionaire?
No camera, nothing to prove.
No, and I tell you, if you guys really knew what was going on in my brain, You know, I ain't trying to put no bullseye on my back, but let me tell you, it's a cold piece, and I don't believe a lot of it. And there's a lot of people. Let the his little girlfriend there that's in there, let her sit there and bake for a few more hours and be violated by a couple of those guards and see what that feels like. She's going to sing like a canary, and I'm telling you, it's going to upset the upper country. Because there's a lot of people out there, and there's a lot of people that are doing it, and it's more prevalent. And I ask that you get help. If you know that there's something wrong, I've talked to professionals, and they really say that there's really no cure for something like this.
No.
But there are warning signs, and there are triggers, just like a person that may be on drugs or alcohol. There's certain things that trigger this behavior, and they know how to stay away from it. So, again, thank you so much. Please come back and be with me on the edge again. Keep me updated on your personal progress, you know, and how you doing, just on some old regular stuff.
Definitely.
Because that's what's important to me too, your well-being, and that you're able to recover and you're able to move forward and help others. Okay, and that's what we do here on the Edge Brains. Okay, we are all about love, we're all about wisdom, we're all about understanding and compassion. Thank you, ladies, so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Love you.
You guys are the best. Bye-bye.